speaker for this evening, Ricky from Encinitas.
Hi, folks. My name is Rick. I'm an alcoholic. Rudy, you're on fire, buddy. That was great. I've been to this meeting before, and I like the energy in this group. You're a good group of people. I came into AA in 1990. I was living in Massachusetts out on Cape Cod. And my wife came home and said she met another man. She was tired of living with a drunk, and she wanted a divorce. So I called Central Services. I spoke to an AA representative, and he began to talk to me, and I began to cry. And I said, "Are you reading the words on my heart? How do you know what I'm feeling?" Well, it was one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. So he told me where to go. And I lived in a town of 9,000 people. I mean, if you went that way down Main Street, you were in the bay. And if you went that way, you were in the ocean. It wasn't very big. And I never knew. I didn't know where this place was. It was a little house on a sandy little road. And so I go down there, and it was a love affair right off. I mean, I'd never heard anybody talk about alcoholism as a problem, as a disease, with a solution. And they hooked me. I mean, my last 10 years of alcoholism were really unfun. I was a very unhappy guy. And it was all refreshing and new and great to me, and I just took it, you know? And probably, I think it was like a week, but it was probably 2 weeks or whatever, I don't know. This guy ambles up to me in the meeting, this big, tall guy with black hair, and he says, "You're probably going to want me to be your sponsor, you know." And I'm probably thinking you ought to go away, you know. And what I did say was, "Oh, that would be wonderful, thank you," you know. And he became my sponsor. His name was Rob. And I'm sure that most of you know people, there's a certain sponsor that people get occasionally that is absolutely the wrong guy, right? But for those early innings, for those first few days or months, right, it's the perfect fit, right? And this was the perfect fit. He took me down to the beach the very first day, and he says, "Here's what I want you to do tomorrow. I want you to be an observer in life and not be a judge." And I said, "Well, fill that in a little bit." He said, "Tomorrow, I want you to wake up and just see life for what it is. Don't judge it. Not the color of Brian's shirt, not her hair, not the guy's got the wrong watch or the wrong car. Just observe it and register it." And that was an eye-opener, man, because we don't know what alcoholism is when we come in here, right? I mean, we have to be taught what it is. But that was a glimpse into how skewed my thinking was. And it was the first kind of window into some sort of humility. I have absolutely thought everything I thought was in total agreement with God. I thought he was on my path, whatever I thought was real, and it was true. And that taught me that I was kind of living in a different place, that I was thinking differently. And then, Rob, like most alcoholics, you know, there's two things you need when you come in here as a dentist and an accountant, because you spend your money drinking and you haven't paid your taxes, right? That's me, both hands. So Rob says, "You owe some money here. You're going to have to pay your taxes." And I said, "Whoa, Nellie, let's not go crazy here, you know." And no, he says, "No, you have to pay your taxes. You have to pay all your taxes, your back taxes." And looking on it now, I mean, it wasn't like it was that much money, but at the time it was. My wife was divorcing me. I had 3 small kids. I had to go find a place to live. I had lawyers to pay. I had child support to pay. And so I went to an accountant, and he said, "You know what you can do is just start filing." This was pre all the computer era. He said, "Just start filing. You only go back 3 years, and if they don't get you, you're back in and just be a good boy from there." And that's what I did. Come to find out, Rob owes the government like $150,000. And he's 10 years sober. And he had chiseled money from the family trust and this and that. And so that was the end of that. But it did get me through the first 3 months when I was sitting on his porch every day when he came home crying, because my life was in a hole. So then fast forward a little bit. I was living out in Cape Cod, 125 miles south of Boston, and I followed her because she came out to visit her mother, who was retired on Cape Cod, on weekends, and then I got a job offer in Boston, so in I go. And I'm thinking, a large city like this, I'm going to find a lot of meetings, and it's going to be easy to get hooked up. And I'm going to get a sponsor, and I'm going to do the steps. And if any of you have moved from one town to another, it's not easy. Every meeting has its own personality, and the fact is, AA is hard to find in AA. You guys have a good meeting, but I'll tell you, there's some real snooze affairs out there, you know, where they're talking about how it hurts, you know, instead of solution. So in this process, and I was getting, I mean, this, I'm not a city boy, and here I'm in Boston, ferreting out all these meetings here and there, and trying to find a sponsor, and I was getting frustrated. And there was this one young guy, his name was Eric, and he kept catching my eye. I just liked what he said, I liked the way he carried himself. And so I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, I can't do that. He says, you're older than me by a bunch, you know, and you have more time than me. He didn't have a lot of time. But I said, hey, I'm tired here looking around. Let's do it. And he said, well, we'll try it. And it turned out to be a very, very good arrangement because all we're selling here is AA program and sobriety. The age difference didn't matter. The fact that I had more time, I didn't have what he had. He came in and took hold of this thing. I didn't. And he took me through my first four step, and it was a very good arrangement. And also during that time, I met my wife, my current wife, who was, I was converting an old building into a Japanese bed and breakfast for a Japanese woman. I was a construction supervisor, and she was visiting from Japan. We met, and today she lives in Encinitas with me, and I'm married to her. But as that evolved, that created a different dynamic. I said, you know, I mean, she's living on the other side of the world. And I'm originally from California. We decided to get married, plane ride from Lindbergh Field direct to Tokyo. Perfect. So I come back to California. I'm 10 years sober now. And again, on the meeting hunt, wound up in Encinitas, piece of cake. Good meetings up there, easy to get to. And I picked the guy who told the good jokes for my sponsor. You know, the guy who was funny at the meeting. And I said, I want to do the steps. He says, hey, fall by sometime and you got a few minutes, you know. I wasn't thinking like that. I was thinking like I needed to do the steps. Again, I didn't quite finish him with Eric. Didn't quite finish him. And almost to the hour of my 10th anniversary, almost to the hour, I went out. And I don't know what that's about. There's kind of a thing about that 10-year deal. I don't know what it does to folks, but I was remodeling this house, and every time we opened the cabinet or whatever, there was a pile of weed. This person was a smoker, right? And I guess I'm tired of looking at it. I finally took up a little of my stuff in my pocket, and I think I drove to Escondido to get papers. You know what I mean? I'm serious. I drove 30 miles, and I was looking if anybody wants me. I rolled one up, and it was no fun. I was completely paranoid, and it was useless. But the benefit was the next day I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. I felt like I felt like I was naked, stranded on the moon. Because you know what? I knew I was an empty package. I knew I was full of bullshit. And I was in trouble. I was 10 years sober. I had not sponsored anybody. Guess what? I didn't want to sponsor anybody. I wanted to work. And I went to AA, and I could, you know, it only takes two meetings to be the parrot. Oh, gratitude, program fixed my life, blah, 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 you know. And that was me. And I was in very bad emotional shape. I was shook up. And I've seen over time that, you know, there kind of are two responses to going out. Either you're going to make something out of it, or you're going to find the revolving door and join the living dead, you know. And I didn't want to be with the living dead. I got a new sponsor, a guy who is, I will always, forever, consider my sponsor. He wasn't the guy that told the jokes. He was the guy that brought the solution that he had learned by applying the steps in his life. His name is Ben. I love him dearly. And so Ben and I sit down, and he said, look, you're going to have to do what I say. Are you in for that? I said, I will do that. I mean, I was ready to do. I would have been directed by you know, some woman cleaning Holiday Inn, if she said she'd fix me, I'd follow her, right? I was ready. I was done. And he said, and I will tell you this, if you will embrace AA with both hands and make it primary and first in your life, I promise you, everything in your life, everything will get better. Now, I need it alone, right? That's what most people, I got to get the girl or the job or the loan, and then I'll really get into AA, I'll really get into it. So all that had to be set aside. It was a leap of faith. But the fear that I had experienced by going out bolstered me. I was scared. And I said, okay. And you know what? I stuck to it. When he said, this guy could talk. My buddy Sean, this guy can talk, man. He'll talk your brain out. But I didn't say anything. I listened to it for many years. Right? I did what he said. So we got into step one and step two. And then here it comes. Step three. I had been a member of an organized Christian religion for 9 years with my previous wife. And got a great foundation for a belief that this still works for me. But there were doubts and there were questions, and I was not satisfied with being told more will be revealed later, or it's too far above us to understand what is working here. And my wife looked at me one day and she said, you know, we're reading about joy and happiness all the time. Why do I always feel guilty? You too? You know, we both felt that way. It was kind of an epiphany we had together. And we left that church. And when I did that, I had a backpack full of residual guilt and doubt and a load that can often come with an organized religion. And now, my sponsor, who I believe in wholeheartedly, who's got me all amped up to be a real AA guy, and I'm believing it, I'm heart and soul, now he's telling me I've got to review that, and I've got to embrace it. And the one thing that I could not do anymore was nod my head yes, when in my heart I was saying no. I couldn't do it. So it became an issue that I had to resolve. And I'm only relating this, I'm telling you my journey, because we don't talk about the 11th step very much. We talk about the third step. You know, we get in this washing machine thing, we come in all bent and twisted, and we go through the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and suddenly we're a shiny penny again, and we're feeling pretty spry. But what happens after that, you know? Anyway, so I had three questions. First of all, I had to resolve, what is God? What are we talking about here? You want me to build this relationship. Now, when I start to think of God in a cosmic mode, infinity, and that this entity that we're calling God created all this, they're saying now that there's no end to the cosmos, you can split out of here anyway in your airplane and keep going to forever? I can't grasp that. I can't grasp that a black hole has such dense atmosphere that a teaspoon weighs 1,000,000 pounds. And that God created all this. How much horsepower do you think it takes to turn the earth on its axis? To spin around? And God's got all of this stuff going all at one time and taking control of it, made it and controlled it. That, when I think of that concept, I separate myself from God. I don't get it. That's a power beyond my comprehension. Then I go to an AA meeting and some guy says, let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Okay, Our Father. A lot of you guys know Emmett Fox. Right? Anybody here read Emmett Fox? Yeah. Those first two words say it all. Our, the collective of all the people on the earth that I don't like. Mm-hmm. I'm related to them. We're one family. Chuck C. in his book, New Pair of Glasses, draws this little diagram where here's the sphere with all these little pictures. That's all the residents of the earth and God. And out here dangling like a grasshopper on a string is Chuck C., this little stick figure. And he says, that was me. Outside of all the rest of this existence, controlled by God. So anyway, I'm trying to figure out. I'm getting kind of amped up on this stuff. Amps me up. But you got to be careful. I'm going to make some people mad anyway. But anyway, it just seemed to me that the big book tells us we have the spiritual component. Deep down inside every single one of us, there's a spiritual component. We are built with it, just like we have heart and lung and brain. And we have to get in contact with it. How many times you go into a meeting and you hear someone say, I never felt like I belonged. Since I was a kid, I never felt like I belonged. Could it possibly be that there's an itch that we don't scratch because there's that spiritual component, that other part that tells us there's something more, but I can't find it? Could it be a detachment or a non-awareness of that spiritual component? So, my buddy Sean, is kind of a brainiac about engineering things, told me once that medical science now can rig a person up with diodes and so forth, and they find that when, during prayer or supplication or meditation, whatever you may call it, to make contact with that power greater than ourselves, there are pathways and connections made in the brain that happen at no other time. It's kind of powerful. Every single civilization that has ever been has made some attempt to make this connection with this spirit that we can't put our finger on. And there are many different forms, every kind of religion that you can imagine has been tried, but it sort of reinforces that there is this natural desire to get a hold of this spiritual component. So I did some reading about Islam and some reading about Buddhism and some reading about Christianity. I don't know a lot about Judaism, but I assume that like all these other, well, Buddhism isn't actually a religion. It's a philosophy, I guess, or a spiritual philosophy. It's in the inception of all these philosophic and religious ideas. Before the paint is dry, there's 50 different sects. There are 1,500 different sects of Buddhism. In Muhammad's time, when he founded Islam, before his own lifetime was over, Islam had fractured in so many different ways and in so many different directions, he tried to realign it and bring it back into one thought again. So the question is, if we're all talking about the same thing, why are we arguing? And why are we fighting? So busy looking at the letter of the word, we forget what it means, kind of a thing. And then along comes Bill and Bob, and guess what? We don't have to worry about it. Because we're not talking about religion. We are talking about spirituality. The road that you take is your road. The road that I take is my road. And there are no road signs. There's no right or wrong on the way. It's what you find. So I gleaned for myself, reiterating, I'm only speaking about my journey. The one thing that I had to have is whatever this arrangement was going to be where I'm going to build this relationship with God again. I choose to call it God. The Buddhists say God's infinite, so we don't need names. He has infinite names. Call it what you want. The power behind the name of God. Fine. Whatever you want to call it. The one thing that I had to have to get my brain parts to work right was that I could not conceive of, if this is true, if we have to have this connection to be able to come and run on all cylinders, fill up that spiritual component and use it, and it's made for all people all over the world for all time, it simply could not be complicated. I don't think God would do that. It can't be hard to figure out. And that was what I, for myself, had to have. It couldn't be. I didn't need somebody to really interpret the whole thing for me. Of course I want somebody to help me along the way. But it isn't so complicated that somebody says, I have to explain it to you because you won't understand it. The second thing was, I had to understand what God's will was. Because there's a lot of talk about that nothing happens in this world without God's will. The question that popped into my mind was it God's will that 55 million people perished between 1940 and 1945 in World War II. 55 million people. Is it God's will that children die from leukemia and cancer? My brother died when he was 7 years old And my mother went to the minister of our church, and she said, "Help me. Why did this happen? What's the meaning of this?" And he told my mother that God wanted your son to be in heaven with him, so he took him back. Now, my mother never went back to that church. Why would she? Why would she? I think the question is, when you come into AA, they ask you, "Why don't you believe in God?" That's not the question. I think the question is, why would you believe in God? There's so much bad information out there. So, I understand that bad things happen in this world. My brother died, this war happened. I understand that these bad things happen. But I choose to feel that nothing happens in this world without God's knowledge. I cannot attribute those things to God's will. I take the path that I was taught in AA, get out of the problem, and get into the solution. For me, God is always the solution. He cannot be the problem. He's the answer, not the question. I'm reconciled for myself. And please don't think that I'm arrogant, because this is my own path. But I know exactly what God's will is for me. I have free will. I can eat spaghetti. I can eat popcorn. I can go to Italy. I can go to Mexico. I can wear one shoe. I can wear two shoes. I have a choice. A duck, when it's born, a little duck comes out of that egg, right? He shakes off all his little baby stuff. He looks down on the ground. There's a beetle. You know what he says? Dinner. He eats it. Nobody has to tell him. His instinct guides him. We're different. We can make a choice. I can do anything I want. I believe that God's will for me is that I accept the gift that He freely gives me, His grace, His love, and His help, and I apply that by trying to find the right principle in making my decisions so that I don't hurt anybody and do the right thing, even if I'm in doubt. And I think that's just that simple. Trying to find the next right thing to do. And it's funny, you go to an AA meeting, guys talk about, Now, they're into the steps, get the steps going. Man, I got the job back. My house is, the foreclosure's been stopped on my house, and my kids are doing good. This program works. I don't know how it does, but it just does. And it's right before us. But I liken it to the idea that it's all too complicated when it really isn't. I take you out and you want to teach you how to play tennis. Here's a ball, here's a racket, here's a line, here's a net, volley, serve, ball. Okay, I come into AA. I quit being a bad guy and try to be a good guy. I try to make decisions that enhance people's lives instead of tearing them down. Good things happen. Don't know how it works? That's the game plan. That's how it works. It's not complicated. So, where am I in time here? Time's up? Okay. How much? Oh, a couple minutes? All right. So the only reason that I go down this path with you people and I say, pardon me? Oh, 12 minutes, okay. Yes, I'm not trying to persuade anyone of anything except one thing. This idea that this journey to build a relationship with a higher power, I think is looked at sometimes askew. It's not something to run from. It's not something to be afraid of. It's individual for each and every one of us. And if you look at the various religions and spirituals, you know, our recovery stores are full of great spiritual literature, really great stuff. And they all kind of lead to one thing. It's between you and your higher power, whatever you choose that to be, because it's your journey and your journey and your journey and my journey. I'm describing my journey only in the hopes that someone who's in doubt will find their journey. And you know what? I was told I have to build a relationship with my higher power. How do I do that? I went in my bedroom, I closed the door, and I sat in my bed, and I started a conversation. That's it. And you can call it contemplation or prayer or whatever, and I continue to do that, and I bring God into every facet of my life. That's what we're told to do. And that part that was empty and unidentifiable now feels pretty good. And when I don't participate, when I don't do that, when I don't keep that conversation going, I'm not feeling that good. And the biggest challenge that I had in doing that was finding the patience to sit there during that time and not be going, yeah, but I've got to be at the hardware store in 5 minutes. Or I'm supposed to pick this guy up, or I'm supposed to do that. If I can't devote 4 minutes to plain quiet contemplation and call it prayer? I mean, it's silly. Of course I can. You know, of course I can. And so can you. Probably pissed off a few people, but I usually do that. Thanks, folks.